Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by Master Prospector, Scott Barker. He joins us from, so he's got a bunch of different titles. I'm just going to list some of them, but not all of them because I'm lazy. Head of Partnerships at Sales Hacker, Evangelist at Outreach, and GM at the Enterprise Sales Forum meetup in Vancouver.
That's it. You nailed it. Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
Man, great to have you on here. I'm really excited because, you know, we did a very brief pre-interview and you're like, yeah, these are the things. Basically, I got this. You also run a podcast. You've also been in the sales game for a long time. You work at Outreach, so expectations are pretty high. No pressure.
No pressure. I host two webinars a week. I co-host the Sales Engagement Podcast, so hopefully I can drop some value.
And I want to note to listeners, I have not intentionally just tried to pull everybody I can from Outreach. At the end of every episode, I ask a guest for a referral. And I've actually been trying to limit. There's somebody else that's introduced me to another person at Outreach, and I've been trying to limit because we've had, you know, a couple people from Sales Loft and like everybody else from Outreach. Mm-hmm. But Scott was local and had some really great stuff to share, so I wanted to get him on.
Awesome, man. Yeah, so, we can literally see each other from my window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your building is like, what is it? One of these ones here, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right on, man. So basically, we're going to cover a ton of stuff today. We're talking prospecting. We're going to talk a little bit about some team stuff, but we're going to just, like, Scott's a pro, so we're going to do just sort of lightning tips. Yeah. So kicking it off, what do you do when people are brushing you off?
Yeah. So, and this is how I'm kind of thinking about this, just going back a little bit. So a lot of these tips and feedbacks have been tried and true. I actually used to run a large business development team before joining Sales Hacker. So it was A/B testing everything. And this is a common problem, right? Is the classic, you know, not interested or not a good time. And it's just a complete brush off. And it's kind of an auto response, right? We all have these auto responses. And when you hear not interested or no thanks, you know that they're not even listening to what you're saying. You know, they're just on autopilot. And immediately when they understood in their brain that you were a cold caller, you just got lumped into every other cold caller they've ever heard, and they shut their brain off. So what I started doing, and this came from the quickest way I know, just backstepping a little bit, the quickest way I know to break down barriers with someone, both in personal and in a professional setting, is actually being vulnerable. I've used vulnerability as a tool my whole career. I'm a very open, honest, like, you know, wear my heart on the sleeve kind of guy. And when you do that, people can connect with you very quickly. So same thing over the phone with someone you've never met. If you can show vulnerability, they're going to feel attached to you very quickly. So what I would do when they hit me with not interested, no thanks, I would say, okay, no problem. Hey man, I'm really trying to get better at this whole cold calling thing. Is there anything that I could have said that would have resulted in me getting a meeting with you? And when you say that, you're going to hear one of two responses. A will be, you know, they'll give you advice and they'll say you were too abrupt, you were too abrasive, or, you know, you didn't explain your value prop very well. And that's all invaluable, right? It's free training. You can apply that to your next call and hopefully it goes better. But more likely, you're going to hear something like this. And I heard this all the time. Honestly, I'm not even sure what it is you're selling. What are we talking about again? What is it? And then you can explain again your value prop, but in a much less combative environment where they are actually listening to you. They actually are fully engaged. And then at the end of this, you'll get your real answer. And it may still be no, but it could also be, oh, you know, that's interesting. Sure, let's book 15 minutes later. But at least this way, even if they say, no, you're not spinning your wheels on someone who's just given you an auto response and you're gonna follow up. So that's one way I've had a lot of success for turning in those, you know, from brushing you off to successful calls. Doesn't work all the time, but I've had a lot of success with it throughout my career.
I love that. It's the, like, it interrupts the pattern that they're expecting. And exactly. It's almost that, like, the old school hand on the doorknob trick. It's like, okay, I'm leaving. I'm walking out the door. And you've got your hand on the doorknob. You're like, see, I'm leaving. But one more question.
Yeah.
And I love this one. Because you're totally right. Most of the times when I get cold called, I'm just like, don't recognize this number. I just want to get them off the phone. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So you said something there. Pattern disruptor. That's a great way to look at it. And something that I think as whether you're a BDR or an AE that prospects, it's something you have to be thinking about and has to be top of mind all the time is how can I get their way of thinking from their typical stereotypical response to, you know, a different environment where it's less, combative and more open.
Because as soon as they pick up the phone, you're like, hey, this is calling Super Predictable Revenue. And you put your like sales radio voice on. They're like, click.
Yeah. The Chris Boss late night DJ voice. Have you read Never Split the Difference?
Love that book. Yeah. I read it and then I reread it and the whole, basically our whole team has read it.
Yeah. It's amazing. I got to read it again, actually, because there's so much in there that I applied a few things right away, but I'm sure there's more that I can go back and learn from.
It saved us so much cash because it made our company better negotiators. And so we negotiate everything now, including salary raises. So it made it a bit harder. How am I supposed to do
you're
that?
You're hearing me right now. Let's stop that.
That sounds like a really interesting point. There's, if you're looking for a refresher, I'll throw it in the show notes here too. Let me Google it. There's basically, if you look for some engineer on GitHub, did this like a summary of the book broken out into like all the key points, like chapter one, bullet points, chapter two, bullet points.
Oh, I love that. That would be perfect.
I'm just going to make a note to our people to include this.
And if nothing else, if you read that book, it's going to make you, be able to win every argument you have with your significant other.
Matt, love the book. My favorite application, even though it wasn't a significant amount of money, was I rent because I live in Vancouver and every house here has cost like $10 million.
Yeah.
I'm exaggerating for sure, but you know.
Close to it.
Our landlord was like, we're raising the rent 25, or no, it wasn't 25, it was like 5% or something like that. I was like, oh, sorry, that doesn't work for me. And that was it. Like, really love this place. It's such a great neighborhood. Said a bunch of nice things. And they're like, we're really sorry, but that just doesn't work for us. You know, we just had a couple of kids, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And then that's all I said. And then she came back and she's like, well, you know, we can maybe do, you know, 2%. And I was like, oh, you know, that's so generous of you. Thank you so much for going to bat for us. But it just, like, we have a certain number that we budgeted for and like, it just doesn't work. And like she came back again with an even lower number. And I was like, okay, I could almost go for the decrease, but we're happy here. And I feel bad because this is at the end of the day, like we're really arguing over not a significant amount of money here.
Yeah.
So I think
you were just flexing at that point.
I wanted to practice. I think I just read the book and I was kind of excited to see, hey, this is working. And so we negotiated from like a $100 a month rent increase to maybe not $100. Somewhere in the range, yeah. Maybe it's $100. Anyway, got it down to like a $4 or no, $15. It was like $14.78.
Yeah. Increase. There you go. It all adds up.
We've certainly saved a ton of money using the book, but that's sort of my favorite like experience because it was like, no, I'm not going to accept, you know, raising the rents here.
Yeah.
Cool.
Love it.
Yeah. So, carrying on the sort of lightning tips, let's say you're writing cold email, people aren't responding. How do you get people to respond to you?
Yeah. This is what it's all about. You know, when you're out there and you're trying to create opportunities, you have to find people to care, who have never met you before, have never heard of your product, have never heard of you, And you have to find a way to, again, disrupt their pattern of behavior and get them to be like, okay, maybe this is worthy of a response. And we all know how many emails we all get every single day. I probably delete 100 emails every day. And you need to find a way to stand out. So I spent many hours, off hours, playing around with funny, informative, different styles of emails, you know, really short emails, longer emails, everything. And I probably A/B tested over, you know, hundreds, literally hundreds. And the kind of 1-2 punch that I landed on when I was a BD manager, and if I remember correctly, it got us about a 30% response rate, which is extremely high. In the world we were at, it was digital asset management, which isn't overly sexy. A lot of people don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And so it was really high in comparison to our other outreach. And I believe to this day, my team that is still there uses it. And that's how effective it's been almost 3 years later. And I can't remember where I came up with this one. I like to think it was a flash of brilliance, but more likely I stole it from, you know, some blog years ago. I used to read way too much on the Sales Hacker blog, on the HubSpot blog, and all these things. But anyway, I'll try and break it down, and it's going to be a little bit difficult to maybe follow along via this podcast, but I'll do my best to break it down. So this is for your first email cold outreach. So this is an email. And what I would do was actually transcribe how a cold call would go on that first email. And I would usually have the subject line as, you know, person's name, nobody likes a cold call. And then the first line would say, I know nobody likes a cold call, so I thought I'd transcribe a typical conversation for you and save us both the hassle. And then I would use, you know, whatever sales engagement platform you use to insert dynamic fields. So this can be done at scale. We did this at scale. You don't have to do it all one-to-one. And you would put their name. So it'd be, let's call them Bob. And Bob would go, hello? And then it'd be my name, Scott. Hi, my name is Scott Barker. I'm calling from outreach.io. The market leading sales engagement platform. Do you have 5 minutes for me? And then Bob, and then would say Bob, he'd go, I guess, man, you've got 30 seconds, go. You know, that happens a lot. And then Scott, you know, would go Scott again, and then it would explain my value prop. And then go back to Bob, and he'd be like, I don't know, man, sounds interesting, but I think we're all set here, thanks. And go back to Scott, understood. But you know, we've actually helped company A get 30% more opportunities in less than, you know, 2 months. If we could do the same for you, would that have a big impact on your organization? Bob, yes, I guess it would. Scott, okay, how about this? Why don't we set up a 15-minute demo later this week with one of our sales engagement experts, and we'll run through a quick tailored demo. If it doesn't blow your mind, then we can high five and part ways. Bob, haha, why not? Scott, awesome, here's my calendar link. And I put to be continued at the bottom. And we got a pretty insane response rate off of this very first email. And this is one of the only cases where people would actually click that calendar link and I would magically have things populate in my calendar, which is like the dream, of course, as any BDR or BD manager, that's like the mecca. That's what we're striving for. So it's kind of this autonomous on autopilot thing that would drive this great response. And they'd almost always respond. Again, it's not always going to be positive. They might hear your value prop and be like, no, we're good. But if they didn't respond to that initial email, mm-hmm. We would then hit them up with a tailored video. So this is part that's a little less scalable because we would directly do it to them. So it'd be a one-to-one. And it would basically say something like, hey, Bob, I got tired of talking to myself on that email thread. So I thought I'd make you a quick video to introduce myself and tell you exactly why I'm reaching out to you specifically. And then, you know, again, high response rate on that one. And then if that didn't work, then we would call into them and reference both of those two pieces. And because it was so memorable and unique, we would get a lot of callbacks on that one as well.
That's awesome, man. I love the creativity of like, you know what? Nobody likes a cold call, so I'm going to email you a cold call script.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we were selling into kind of a mixture of IT and marketers. So I just tried like to really put myself in their shoes and be like, okay, like, what are they thinking about? They don't want to hear from me. They don't want to hear from this peppy guy who's calling them all the time. So let's try and kind of poke fun at myself a little bit. And let's see how they respond that way. And it worked. It worked really well.
That's great, man. I heard one thing that you would actually, would you ask for 5 minutes? Like got 5 minutes for me?
Yeah, I typically would. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that what you guys do or no? There's mixed feelings. And again, we would switch our script up quite a bit, but
yeah.
For the sake of this email, that's what we would do.
Gotcha. I don't have any data to support this. Mm-hmm. I always would go, have I caught you at a bad time? And yeah. Everybody would always go, yes, you caught me at a bad time, but and then they're like, okay, you've got 30 seconds. I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah.
You know, so I know some people like the, hey, you know, do you have 2 minutes? Got 5 minutes for me is nice and casual. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely had success with both. And being like, yeah, is this a bad time for you? That's a good one because it can naturally lead, even if they're like, no, you can be like, okay, no problem. When is a good time for you? And then that can, you know, help you get something on the books.
But, 100%. Yeah, no, yeah. This is a better time. Cool. I'll shoot you a meeting invite. Is your email this? Yep. Okay, perfect. And now we've got something scheduled.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
So we've got people, we figured out how to brush people, how to deal with people brushing us off.
Yeah.
We've got 30% on our response rates. What if it's say coming up to the end of the quarter and you really need that little extra push?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've all been there. If you haven't been there, then you're the best opportunity creator in all the land. But yeah, there's always those times when maybe the month didn't go your way or maybe the quarter's not going your way and you need to find a way to pull more out of the same amount of hours that you have, right? And one of the ways that I found super effective and my team found super effective was, just getting there earlier. I find executives in particular, if you're selling into the C-suite, best time to get busy people, I would say is from like 7 till 8:30 AM. Either they're on their commute or that's like their only time that's to themselves because after probably like 8 o'clock, realistically, they are in meetings the entire time. So trying to get them before that. And then, you know, maybe you take a longer lunch that day and then, you know, try them again around the, you know, 5 o'clock to all the way to like 7 o'clock for executives. Mm-hmm. And then if you really want to hit it, what our team would do the last week of almost every quarter, we would kind of go into overdrive and start working what we called Aussie hours. So Australia's workday actually starts at about 3 p.m. Pacific time, roughly. And they're all just waking up. They're all just starting their day. And it's an English-speaking country, so that's super helpful. So there's no language barrier. They're also typically really fun to talk to. So even if you're not creating opportunities or getting to that next level, they're actually really courteous and polite, I find. Mm-hmm. So of course your business would have to support customers in Australia, but we found this was a great way to sneak in, you know, 3 to 5 extra ops on that last week, just by extending our day. And then typically we would, you know, work Aussie hours from like 3 p.m. till, you know, a little bit later. We'd stay till like 8 and then we'd have some fun and I would treat the guys to, you know, pizza and beer or something like that. And it would be a lot more of a casual work environment. We were having fun doing it. So I would recommend at least giving it a shot if you're an individual contributor or a manager looking for ways for that little oomph at the end.
So just to clarify, would you, you would start your day at the normal, like still start at 8 and then just work until 8? Or would you come in at, come in a bit later? I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah, we did both. Okay. So we did both. So sometimes I would let the guys and gals like sleep in a little bit more, and then we would and stay later. And then there was other times when we're all, you know, in it together, and we're just like, okay, we'll just work more, and then they'd be in at the same time. So We've done both. You can play around with either.
Cool. I was just trying to clarify. I love the whole like the short-term sprint. Hey, we're trying to hit a goal. We got to hustle.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure we're not talking like, hey, this is getting people to do 12, 14 hour days every day of the week.
No.
It's going to lead to a productive sales team.
Yeah. And this was all optional, completely optional. This was never, it was never expected. And we tried to make it fun. I think even someone had like a funny Australian hat they would put on and stuff. So we tried to make it fun, and it was more than anything, it was like showing, for me, it was me showing my team that I was willing to stay with them and bang this out if they weren't hitting their number. I'd be like, okay, let's get you to a point where you are, and I'll be here like right beside you, you know, making these calls. And you know, you can even flip the ops that you create onto your team if you're a strong manager. I would suggest doing that.
Plus, it's a great excuse to walk around the office all day going, mate.
exactly. Totally.
Yeah. I lived there and I had for a year, and I had one of my buddies explain I think he had like 30 some odd different ways you could use the word mate. And I had one day I had him just like stand there and list them all. It took hours.
Yeah, man. I actually lived there as well. I lived in a suburb outside of Sydney. I moved there by myself when I was 18, actually.
It was
a lot of fun.
What suburb?
Not a nice one. Parramatta, if you're familiar. Yeah.
It's pretty rough.
It's a pretty rough neighborhood, but I didn't know. I was just a young kid going with it. And so I had some fun.
I think it was a little bit farther out on the same train line. I lived in Blackstown?
Blackstown, I think it's called.
Which is like another, it's the same train line, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really good Lebanese food in Blackstown, if I remember.
Amazing Lebanese food, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And like certain parts of town you don't want to go, and they had some big massacre there at some point. But yeah.
It's, you gotta watch out a little bit, but for the most part.
Sydney was beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool, man. So getting back on topic here, what happens when an exec just isn't getting back to you? So you've got this guy in your sequence, and you're just, you know, you've tried this, you've tried that, you're calling them, you know, calling them early, calling them late, can't get in touch. What do you do?
Yeah, this is the classic. This happens all the time. And, you know, I find this happens even when you have those really good conversations with people and they're feeling your vibe and they're saying all the yes, and you've got your happy ears on, and you're like, sweet, like, this is amazing. Yeah, I'll follow up in 2 weeks. No problem. This is going to be great. And then, of course, you follow up in 2 weeks. They're not answering the phone, so you send them an email. You're all hopeful. They don't get back to that email, so you're still hopeful. Send them another one, and crickets. And then by the third email, you're like, okay, maybe this guy is not getting back to me. And so you run your whole plays, right? You'll start running them through your whatever sequence that you have for people that you've contacted who are not getting back to you. But two things that I have seen really help in this situation, and this is when you've basically exhausted all of your moves. Like you've thrown all your best dance moves at these people, and they're just not getting back to you. So the first one, which I actually stole from my CEO, Max Altshuler, and now the VP of Marketing at Outreach. And he still does this to me, and it's funny because it works on me. So you've got this like email thread, and they're not getting back to you. Well, instead of like continuing to reiterate the same messaging, hey, you know, let's get time on the calendar. Hey, let's get time on the calendar. Hey, let's get time on the calendar. Max would do what's called a silent bump. So think of this as like a poke on Facebook almost. Mm-hmm. And it's just being like, hey, I'm still here. And you forgot about me, but I'm still here. And it's just sending them a touch that's just a blank email. And it almost seems like you did it by accident. But it will bump you up into the top of their inbox. They'll see your thread again. And it gives them another opportunity to maybe be like, oh, okay, right. I was supposed to get back to that guy. But it's not an annoying thing. You're not overdoing it. So had a lot of success with that one. And we'll still use it sometimes even with coworkers and stuff. The silent bump is a funny one. Because you'll see a lot of people actually respond to it and they'll have a million excuses. But that's one. So shout out Max for that one. And then the other one that I've had a lot of success with personally is creating content for social media. So this piece of content is basically targeted at this person, but it's not using their name. It's not using their company name. You're basically walking through the situation. Like you could even as far as go, you could be like, you know, I had this great conversation with this person and then it, you know, didn't work out. How do you respond in those situations to LinkedIn? Something like that. Mm-hmm. Or break down the challenges that you were talking about on that conversation and how you, you know, solved for them with other orgs. So you can create, you know, either it's a LinkedIn video or a post and you can tag them in it. I usually don't tag them in it. It can seem a little like abrasive, but it's really about staying top of mind, right? That's what social selling, which I think is a misnomer, is all about, is about, you know, when they are ready, that they remember you and they come to you. So that could be the touch when they're scrolling through LinkedIn and they see this relevant piece of content that you shared, could be the light bulb moment that they're like, ah, totally forgot to get back to Scott. We actually had that problem, but X, Y, and Z came up and I was never able to get back to him. So that's another one, a play that I've used, had good success with people that are essentially ignoring you.
I like that. I've done the same. I've been a little bit more salesy, a little bit more aggressive, and I'll write a post about, you know, this is the situation that, you know, one of our prospects is in, you know, this is how, you know, this is what it's costing them long term. This is how I think we could help. And then I'll sort of tag the prospect.
Yeah. Nice.
It's more aggressive for sure.
Yeah.
I'm just never confident in the LinkedIn algorithm and that it's going to bubble it up to the top of my prospect's inbox.
Yeah. It's very true. Very true. And it's changing every day.
Yeah. It used to be a lot better. Like you had a higher chance of like actually getting people that followed you to see, but I don't know. I find like in the last year and a half, things have gotten a lot noisier out there.
Totally. I would agree. And actually one more point on this. I'm just remembering this now. Another play that we would run with a lot of success, it's manual. So it's harder to do at scale, mm-hmm. but a lot of these points are here. But so when we were on an email thread, let's say you've got like six emails that are that no one's responding to, mm-hmm. I would actually send that email thread to my CEO. At the time, we were only about a 50, 60 person org at this time. So he was still accessible. I would send that email thread to my CEO, write him a template of what he wanted. I wanted him to send, and would actually get the CEO to send them an email. And usually it would just go something like this. It would be like, hey, I was just combing through, you know, our CRM over the weekend. I'm seeing what, you know, opportunities are coming around the corner. And I saw that Scott had reached out to company A, Lululemon. Just so happens I'm a huge raving fan of Lululemon. My wife wears your pants all the time. And really hoping that this goes somewhere. So let me know if you want to chat about, you know, digital asset management at the time. And we can get this going and see if it'll be a good fit. And that also got an extremely high response rate.
And would they send it CEO to CEO or CEO to your prospect?
CEO to my prospect. Also ran that play as well, of having the CEO reach out to their CEO on LinkedIn with some success. But I was usually reaching out to the C-suite anyway, so it made sense.
I prospect using that. I'm CEO over here, and so I use that, and I find I'm like, I get great response rates, guys.
Yeah.
Why your response rates suck? And I think it's very easy to forget if you're in that role.
Totally. Even
I still think of myself as a salesperson. I grew up in sales. I lived in sales I still see myself as in sales. I'm part of our rev team.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to forget. Like if you're the founder, you get probably a 30 to 150 or 300% boost on your response rates just because of the title.
Yeah. Agreed.
One sort of tactic, if an exec isn't getting back to you, that I found really effective, because it kind of, in some ways, it can skip the, and you got to be careful with this one, because it can, if you misuse it, it can come across as like super aggressive and a bit dodgy. But I used to use it in the early days when I was, this is probably like 4 or 5 years ago, when I was the like founder CEO, but also like the sales guy. So I wasn't really a CEO at the time, but you know, I used that in my signature because whatever. Yeah. And I was handling our inbound funnel, and we got a ton of inbound. And I got to a point where I was just so overwhelmed with all the things I had to do. I was like, fuck it. I'm going to send one email. I'm going to say, hey, listen, you know, it looks like, you know, thanks for reaching out. Here's what I think we can help with. Does this time or that time work for you? And then I would just send two calendar. I'd be like, PS, I'm going to send you two calendar invites. Accept if it works, don't accept if it doesn't. And I had a little like, cause I was doing this all the time, and I had like some like keyboard shortcuts, or I could be like LLK, and it would just like, boom, it would paste that last bit in. Like, let me know if like decline if they don't work for you, accept if it does basically. And if you double decline, then I'll reach out again and we can do something. And I found that to be really effective if I'm in sort of in this like follow-up game where somebody's initially said yes, you know, you've got the happy ears, and maybe, you know, you duffed it and you didn't book next steps, you know, like, like I know I should have, cause I've totally done that thousands of times. So you've already had a little bit of engagement and you just want something to, you know, push them over the edge. Mm-hmm. I find that one's really great. And I'll make sure I throw the call agenda like in the description of the meeting invite.
Super important.
One, it's just another email that comes to them. But two, if they use their calendar, it shows up on their calendar, right? Mm-hmm. So they have to, so it's a bit more intrusive. So be careful with how you use that one. But I would get as high as like, I mean, I had some where it was like 50% response rates. And it wasn't just a response rate. It was like a meeting accept rate on those. Yeah.
That's awesome. And yeah, I wouldn't say it's overly like, you know, abrasive, especially like, you know, you have to know when to use that, like in the inbound circumstance. I think it's definitely more appropriate, but I like
probably not a first touch,
not a first cold touch. Probably not. Hey, have you had people do that to you?
I've had people do that.
And my calendar's pretty busy. So like I had just accepted being like, okay, I got to meet someone for some reason, and then it showed up, and it was a person that had found my email and just sent me one. This is not a good way to start a relationship, my man. I'm sorry. We are discontinuing this meeting. But
We've tried a bunch of like, well, you know, on our rev team, we'll try anything at least once.
Totally.
We did a little campaign where we did it for inbound, and we had a great success rate. You've already had the conversation. There's already some interest.
Yeah.
We tried it with like 10 or 20 outbound, and we got like 10 or 20 complaints about you know, it's a great way to get a response.
Definitely. Yeah. That's the other thing, right? You got to watch your KPIs that you're, if you're just going for response rate, that'll give you 100%, but 100%. The sentiment might not be what you want.
Exactly. You're not booking a meeting with that, you know, with that prospect.
Yeah. You know?
All right, man. So what happens if people keep brushing you off, right? This is it's a high value prospect, and you know, you're getting the brush off there. You're not getting the responses. What happens? Mm-hmm. What do you do?
So I would say this is, you know, let's say we use my little ask for feedback trick, and we're all vulnerable and they're not buying it. And they're still like, man, I'm busy. I'm in a meeting. I got stuff to do. Like, I can't give you feedback. And again, your job is to find ways around that. How can I make myself relevant? How can I make myself interesting to this person so they give me the time of day? And this is where I see video being extremely effective. I think gone are the days of the, you know, the prospecting videos where you had the little whiteboard and you'd have their name on it. That was awesome. And we implemented that 3 years ago. And then it got saturated. Everyone was doing it, became gimmicky. And I don't think it works anymore. I'm sure there's arguments for both sides. You can get more creative. You can try other things. But the first touch video email, I don't see it being as effective as it once was. But where it is effective is when you've had that like really quick contact or and they've brushed you off, it's a good way to humanize yourself and also get out your message. You can literally right after they hang up the phone, you can quickly make a 30-second video from your webcam on your computer, use tools like, you know, Vidyard or BombBomb or whatever you're using and send it to them. And it's just, you know, hey, so sorry I caught you at a bad time. You know, it's the nature of the job. Sometimes you get people when they're in a meeting. But I wanted to send you this video, A, to introduce myself, and B, just to, you know, skip a few steps and explain to you, you know, why I was calling. So they don't have to just, you know, keep following up for the sake of following up. And you can let me know if it makes sense to keep pursuing this discussion. Super short, keep it simple. And it's much harder for them to keep brushing you off, especially when they see you call again. And they're like, oh, this guy called me. Now, this is now the second time he's called me. He spent time making a video. Like, again, I'll at least tell him either way. You know, again, no's are fine. Those are okay, but you don't want to be stuck in limbo. So I found that was a good way to humanize myself and get them to respond.
Love it. So basically, they're not responding, or maybe you got the brush off. Mm-hmm. You're like, hey, I'm going to record this video sort of explaining why.
Yeah.
Let me know.
Well, yeah. Kind of the why you now kind of thing. Or yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or the, are you like, it's almost the, what is it? The breakup email.
Yeah.
Style where you're like, hey, is it this? Is it this? Or are you trapped under your desk?
Yeah. But never use that. That's that's the bane of my existence is that, or are you getting chased by a polar bear? Again, yeah. Was fantastic. And I laughed out loud the first time I heard it 6 years ago, but it's gone. It's dead.
Unfortunately. I was so choked when I saw, like, I think Sales Loft, like Kyle wrote a blog post about it like 6 years ago. And I was like, damn it. Because I never used the funny one, but I used the like ABC thing all the time. And I was like,
yeah,
now everybody's going to be using this and it's going to just destroy my response rates.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm waiting for the transcribe email to blow up. It's going to come and then I'm going to be sad. But
yeah, I'm secretly editing it out of the first I'm like, I'm just going to use that myself.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So I know we said we agreed to five, but I want to get some bonus questions in because we got a few more minutes. If you got a few more minutes.
Yeah. For you.
Oh, Scott. So how do I keep my objection handling fresh?
Yeah. So objection handling fresh. So this one, we had a fun way of doing this, and basically what we would do is, because no one really no one likes going over objections. Like, it's one of the least, like, you know, everyone thinks that they kind of know it and they're like, nah, I know how to handle objections. Let's just whatever. But it's super important to role play and keep visiting your answers. So what we would do is on Fridays around, you know, 4:45, 5 o'clock, things are slowing down a little bit. Maybe there's some beers or, you know, a more casual environment for sure. We would get together as a team and do like objection battles, which the manager leads, and you would, as a manager, you would come up with an objection. You don't let them know what it is beforehand, but it's, you know, of your common 15, 20 objections that you have, it's one of those. And you are going to give it to them. And say, you give it to them, you know, at that time, the 4:45, when you're doing the exercise, and you give everyone 2 minutes to gather their thoughts, write it down if they have to, and then pitch it to the team. So basically, you go around the room and you, the manager, will role play as the prospect, say the objection, and they'll handle it. And then at the end, everyone will vote on who has the best answer to the objection. And then everyone gets one vote, and the manager's vote will count as two votes. And then, you know, the winner gets something nominal, who knows, extra beer or lunch or coffee or something like that. And really the goal of the entire group when we were doing these sessions, like when we really felt like we won, was when we could update, because we had our sales playbook with all the answers to the objections. Mm-hmm. And the best times were when we actually had such a good answer that we would go into the playbook and update it, because it was something fresh, it was new, we had new information, right? Every day you're gathering more information on what the market wants, and we would actually go in and update it. And that's when it felt like a big team win. And then everyone, again, they just get to hear how everyone answers it, and it kind of democratizes the knowledge throughout the entire team. So similar to a lot of role-playing exercise, just a fun way to do it with objections particularly.
That's awesome. I love any time you can sort of take it, you know, take the formality out of things and like mm-hmm. make it a bit more casual, make it a bit more fun.
Totally.
I remember we worked with this one team, Terrakeet, and their VP of sales, Rich, I can't remember his last name. He would do like a, you know, your traditional power hour, but mm-hmm. he'd split everybody into teams, and you had like, it was a point system. And he was like, so it was basically it split the SDR team into like three teams of two or three people. And, you know, a connect was worth this much. You know, you got to objection handling was worth this much, you know, you got bonus points for every extra objection that you handled, and you got extra, you know, X points for when you booked that meeting.
Nice.
Like this alone, you know, you go and try this and it sounds fun. He was basically like, you know, Bruce Buffer from the UFC, and the guy was running up and down, and he's listening to calls. He's like, was that an objection? Yeah. And he's putting points on the wall. And like, he had this, like, he would do like a pump up, you know, it was sort of like, imagine like Michael Scott made a, you know, promotion, like a pump up, you know, it was exactly what you're thinking, sort of Lazy Scranton style.
Yeah, and I love it.
Like he'd play the video first and it's him and it's like overdubbed music is great. And then he's just like, he was running back and forth between the teams, and they had like proper landlines. So you're dialing in, like you've got the, you know, old school phone up against the arm, which I know most people probably don't do today, but
yeah,
it was just such a good experience. And it was, you basically alternated, so there's three phones and you alternated the person on the phone. And so everybody's just sort of like taking turns, and you like, you're giving feedback. You're like, okay, you could have done this, you could have done that. But it was this like almost artificial high pressure environment, because it's not about the meeting or like, or the pressure of, oh, I got to book this. It's about, mm-hmm. I want to beat the team next to me.
Totally. Right?
So now you're competing, and he's tricking you into doing the work that you're supposed to be doing, but now you're smiling and having a real good time.
Yeah.
And they were crazy. They're from Syracuse, love the team. And I think loser had to be like, the losing team had to be goalie. They had this like version of ball hockey where they basically just shoot balls at each other. But if you were the goalie, you had to stand against the wall and you couldn't shoot balls back. And so the rest of the team got to like pelt you.
That sounds awesome.
They were wild.
That's cool. That's a good leader right there, right? That's what it's all about, is finding ways to have fun and getting the job done.
And like, I'm thinking back and it's putting a smile on my face.
I can see that. It's awesome.
Talking about cold calling. Like,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
It was a good time. That's cool. One last question, and then we got our last segment, but how do I onboard people? What's the right way to do that?
Yeah. Onboarding super, super, super key, because it's kind of setting the tone for how they're going to perceive your organization, how they're going to perceive success, how they're going to handle objections in the future, how they're going to prospect, all these things kind of live and die by onboarding. Something not actually from that I implemented, but I think that it's an amazing, amazing way to do it. And it's something that Outreach does, and they've had a ton of success with it. And Sam Nelson, I believe, was the one who initially implemented this. So shout out to Sam. And they have what's called this Agoji tribe, Now, bear with me. You're not supposed to know what that means because nobody does. But basically, agoge is a term that was actually taken from the Greek Spartans. And it was this idea of putting new recruits into a fully immersive environment where everyone was on the same playing field. So everyone was new. And they were kind of learning and going through trials and tribulations together so that they, when they emerged, they had a very tight bond. And one of the key things in that is that the agoge tribe would have their own leader that was for them and them alone. So if they had any questions or they needed answers right away, they could get it immediately. So you get an agoge leader who's your dedicated manager who has no other roles or responsibilities other than your success. That's it. They're dedicated to you. They're not worried about someone else hitting target. They're not worried about hitting their number. They're worried about you hitting, you know, your goals and ramping up quickly. And so we adopted this methodology at Outreach and saw amazing, amazing success with it. People felt like they had all the answers to their questions at their fingertips. And then the other really cool benefit that we saw by implementing this is this, they kind of live in their own microcosm, right? So they're brand new. They don't know the benchmarks. They don't know, you know, best practices or what's table stakes or anything. So it's also a really good way that you can basically stay agile as you scale out, and you can test out different ideas, different concepts, different things in this small microcosm, this agoge tribe, and see if it works before you roll it out to like the entire organization. And we've seen some really interesting results with different things that we've, you know, tested in the agoge tribe, and they'll actually beat like long time, you know, very successful BDRs just because they come in with a totally new way of thinking. So I think Sam Nelson has a great article on this that we can link to somewhere. I would strongly suggest checking it out because I think no one does their onboarding better than Outreach is doing it right now.
That's really cool. I've got the link. I'm going to throw in the show notes as well as the wiki link for agoge or agoge or
whatever it is. Wrong.
So just for clarity's sake,
yeah.
Is it 1-to-1? So it's a non-manager who's now your agoge leader, and that one leader has one tribes person, or is it one dedicated manager, one dedicated agoge leader for a specific tribe?
Correct. Yeah. So there's an agoge leader, across Outreach whose, mm-hmm. his sole purpose is to, when anytime a new tribe or a new people come in, they'll do all their group training, together, and he'll lead them to kind of success until that they're fully ramped. And then they'll get paired with their normal manager.
That's great.
Yeah.
Cool, man. And for the last section here, I'm pretty sure we talked about it, but because I've started giving guests a heads up about, you know, we do a little bit of cold call role play. I can't, mm-hmm. My notes were so brief. I can't remember if I gave you a heads up on this.
Let's do it. What are we doing? Are we doing a cold call role play?
So give you a chance to promote anything you want.
Okay.
And we'll do it in the most sales podcast way possible with cold call.
Okay,
do you want a minute to think about what you're doing?
It can be anything.
Anything you want to promote. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll just do, I'll do Outreach. Let's do it.
Cool. So what's the context here? And no pressure, but I had Steve Ross and Mark Kosselglau also do this.
Oh, okay.
So if you're from Outreach and you've heard both of those, hit me up, because I definitely want to hear how Scott did compared to you guys.
I love this. So I've never actually done a cold call for Outreach. So this is amazing. Actually, maybe let's, I'm going to, cause now you put pressure on me. I'm going to stack the deck and maybe I'll do a sale. Let's do sales hack. I'll stack the deck. Yeah.
That's fair. Because a big fan of Max and Sales Hacker and everything you guys have built. So
yeah, cool.
Okay, so what's my, who am I?
So you're going to be either a VP of marketing, director of marketing, or perhaps an event marketer. So you're a marketing manager and above. You're at a sales technology company. And I'm going to call you and we're going to talk about potentially getting you involved in some Sales Hacker initiative.
Perfect. All right. Ring, ring. Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin. It's Scott Barker calling from Sales Hacker. How are you, man?
I'm good.
Good. I was wondering if you have 5 minutes for me. I wanted to run something by you.
I'm just about to walk into a meeting. You got 30 seconds.
Okay, cool. So listen, I was giving you a shout because I saw you're the marketing manager over at Predictable Revenue. And we've been working with a lot of different companies in your space, particularly, you know, likes of Gong, Intercom, Outreach, basically to help them fill their funnel with some really highly targeted leads. And I figure as, you know, the head of demand gen, this would be something up your alley. When's a better time to have a chat about that? I know you're jumping into a meeting.
Yeah, not really interested. We've got our top of funnel pretty solved.
Okay, cool. What sort of initiatives are you using to fill that funnel?
All of them.
All of them. Nice. All right, do you guys have a pretty baked out webinar strategy by any chance?
No.
No. Okay. So that could be something that's interesting to discuss. Reason I ask is because Gong, again, one of our partners, they've been doing webinars with us for about the last 2 years or so. And what's really cool is they've seen about a 10x ROI on the different webinars that we're doing. If we could drive similar results for Predictable Revenue, would that be something worth exploring?
I think you got the meeting.
Perfect.
Right on, man.
That was awesome, man. I actually don't do that many cold calls anymore. So that was really fun.
That was fun. I apologize.
Feedback. Let's go. I want to hear the feedback. And just so everyone knows, I did not get a heads up on that one.
You did not get a heads up. That's right. the pre-call was super brief. You're like, yep, I got this. And I usually write down, you know, cold call role play just to remind myself that we talked about it. And I was like, oh, I don't think I did. But I didn't think you'd have a problem with me surprising you with it.
We're all good, man. We're all good.
Yeah.
Cool. I want to hear your feedback. What I got the meeting, so that's okay. But if I was one of your reps, what would you tell me?
I mean, I think so much is context dependent. I think coming into it, knowing like if you're calling into marketing manager, first off, disappointed I got demoted from CEO to marketing manager, but you know, I'll let that slide.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it would have, you know, with marketing, it's one of those things that's so obvious. It's like easier to see if they have a webinar initiative.
Right.
You can look on the site. So if that was an angle that you were taking, which it sounded like a pretty powerful one, I might have gone with and noticed that, you know, I was on your site. I didn't see any webinars or I'm on your email list. And I noticed that you had a webinar, but it was all internal.
Yeah.
So basically I would have just done a bit of research. And, you know, I think it depends on the context. Because if this is a $5,000 deal versus a $100,000 deal, you're going to do quite a bit. But I think overall it's a very good call. That's one sort of tweak if you're looking for something.
Yeah. Nice, man. I love it. Thank you for the feedback. And I agree. I think you live and die in cold call by not necessarily the content, but the context. So you're exactly right.
Totally. The call is already won or lost with all the research that you've done and the reason why you're calling.
Totally.
Right on, man. Thanks so much for coming on the show today, Scott. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
LinkedIn. Best way is LinkedIn. Yeah. Scott Barker. Hit me up. Write me a little note and I'll 9 times out of 10 accept.
Right on, man.
Cool.
Cool. Thanks for coming on the show, Scott.
Thank you so much, Colin. See ya.
See ya.